Hello. What I was, well, what I want to do is open with two sections from Negrophobia. And then introduce the newer pieces that we've been developing. Why am I opening up with Negrophobia? So you can get used to the sound of my voice. And notice the change. The new pieces. Now, Negrophobia is my first novel. It was published 25, 30 years ago. I've lived with it forever. And it's about a young girl by the name of Bubbles Brazil, who lives on the upper west side of Manhattan, goes to an all-black high school. Given the fact that she's the only white person in her high school, she's harassed a lot and decides to become proactive and cast a spell to protect herself. Unfortunately, her spell is counteracted by her maid. So as a result, all of her fears about blacks manifest, become flesh. She experiences what I call here Negrophobia. In the section I'm going to read right now is the subway sequence. She's going to high school.
Interior subway car morning. Sound effects, trains, loud locomotive rattle. Pull back from close shot of the urban tribal ovals painted on Bubbles' face to medium shot of Bubbles bunched into a ball on the subway train's plastic vents. The train's rock and rumble rattles her bod. Bubbles is seated between a nurse and a wino. The nurse is fat and black, the wino is black and babbling. Sporting a dried out high top Little Richard conch, the wino is dressed in bits of discarded costume he's discovered in the theater district's trash bins. He wears fungus-covered feathered boas, a sequin G-string, fishnet stocking, a gummy grime-covered gold lamé jacket, and a pair of purple platform shoes. Believing the subway car to be the set for Arsenio Hall's television talk show, the wino preens for the TV cameras, patting the smears of aqua gel smudged on his high-top conch. He laughs, slaps his thighs, and smokes invisible cigarettes. Feathers and sequins float to the floor.
I was making that big time money back in 1920. $250 a week. And do you know why? I was the original little rascal. Mr. Moon Pie used to call me. Yeah, that's right. I was before Farina, Stymie, Buckwheat, any of them has-beens. And I was screwing up too. On the Bowery, Muggsy, and such. I even shared Bill with the old time smacker Kelly Tracker. And let me tell you, that was no blood he was banging. Me and Track did the huge. Which is why he was such a freaky motherfucker. Track flashed and flipped the fuck out. Now I make $50,000 a night out in Vegas with my name in neon, high above the strip, Moonpie and the Motor City Mules, Smoketown kind of thing, with Mickey Mouse gloves, big white lips, and synchronized dance steps. We be grinning our asses off. And I runs with the Rat Pack. I'm backslapping buddies with Dino, Frank, Sammy, Jared, and his cripple cheering. I'm Mr. Entertainment himself. Why talk Scatman Crothers everything he knows?
The nurse, seated on Bubbles' right, looks at the wino and rolls her eyes in disgust. Ticks of annoyance tug at the faces of the other passengers on the subway car. The wino turns to Bubbles.
You know, we ain't had pussy when I was a boy. That's right, pussy hadn't been discovered yet. You see, pussy was first discovered in 1827 in a cave down in Mississippi. Master Johnson. He gun out quail, honey. There was.
Sitting right up there in a cave, laughing.
Bubbles tries to ignore the wino, but as amazed, counterspell begins to take effect, exposing Bubble to her negro.
She grows fearful, her body appearing to wilt smaller and smaller in size.
I don't know what the hell it is, but let's grease it down and fuck it anyway.
The train stops. Bubble stares out the window. Passengers file into the subway car, filling the seats and jamming the aisles. Kettle crammed bodies sparkle with pungent perspiration. Bubbles wrinkles her nose at the thick Negro smell. An albino in goofy skull cap, a floor-length linen robe, billowing bulb pants, and curved slippers enters the car carrying a kunga drum. He stands by the doors on the left side of the car's far end. The albino's complexion is the urine hue of unflavored gelatin. His eyes are rabbit pink. His afro is nicotine yellow. His palm paddled the skins of the kunga drum. Listen as my snakes slither out of majestic African drums. Lost subway children in masks of ebony black wood distorted by ivory minds. White man, kiss my black behind. An angry voice shouts off screen. Shut up with them drums, you funny looking radiant ass nigga. I got wild eye pounding in my head this morning. The albino paddles his kunga skin. This is no Arabian Nights, brother. This is the all too real nightmare of America, the treacherous. And I am not a nigger. A nigger exists only in the blue eyes of the devil. My name is Al-Shabaab Shabazz Hasrid. I'm an inner city shaman, a minstrel of mal metaphysics, and a pop poet of oppressive people and propaganda. Can you spare a quarter for hour?
Oh, please, nigga, shut up! My head, yo! Anybody know what color classification this nigga's complexion qualified for?
I don't know, but if you rub his fro, I bet you a genie fly out and a puff of reefer smoke and grant you three wishes.
The passengers explode with laughter. In spite of his embarrassment, the albino continues pounding his kunga drum. Domestics, factory workers, street hustlers, junkie transvestites, and other slum dwellers of increasing strangeness board the subway car and converge on bubbles from all sides. A ring of ghoulish faces revolve around the periphery of bubbles' vision, all with large bloodshot eyes, bone-pierced nostrils, and clacking plate-distended lips. An onrush of fragmented images evoked in low-lit eeriness stab Bubbles' consciousness in quick succession, congealing into a cubist portrait of urban paranoia. A minister with no face, the hollows of his skull covered by a scabbing layer of undulating skin, leans forward and waves his hands before Bubbles in silent malediction. A noisome brood of palsy retards, drooling mongoloids, grinning pinheads, slithering quadriplegics, and humpbacked dwarves shamble through the subway car, squealing and grunting like pigs. Clustering around Bubbles in curiosity, they paw her breast and hair, wheezing a pathetic sound midway between a pant and a whine. Hyperventilating with terror, Bubbles shuts her eyes in cold horror. When her eyelids open, Bubbles finds just inches in front of her nose a testicle drooping from an open fly, its few strands of pubic hair matted with a crust of dried semen. Bubbles looks up. A junkie, stooped in nod, hangs over Bubbles with one hand gripping an overhead strap. His pelvis swings back and forth with the train's rock and rumble. Locomotives and kunga thuddings are synchronized to the junkie's pelvic thrust. Two ill-tempered young Negroes stand on either side of the junkie, speaking with fervent intensity. The second ill-tempered young Negro is a cane-tapping sycophant.
Wall-to-wall whiteys. Imagine me up north in Maine with wall-to-wall whiteys. Me and this other brother, and he ain't even tap, was one of those upwardly mobile niggas of the Boogie Boogerhood. An android nigga. Right. Manufacturing one of whiteys nigga factories. The original prototype for nigga baby candies. Pop-top from a Maximo. A Klingon nigga. A Klingon nigga. nigga. The coon from Planet X, spoken alien tongue. Just me and this out of tune buffoon, monks wall to wall whities. As a genuine jitterbug and jigaboo, them hunkies made a point to check me out. Well, faded bitches was always accidentally on purpose, bumping their titties in my face and rubbing my cheeks, talking about, it do feel like a Brillo pad. In the mornings, when I be taking my showers, I was pulling fistfuls of blind pussy hair out my crotch. Brother, I was gunning. Gunning the great white bitch. Gunning the great white bitch. I swore the total annihilation of the entire white race and anything left over with the faintest trace of that demon hunky scent, for the bitch drove me mad. Was nothing a nigga could relate to. A world without James Brown 45s. No James Brown 45s. No Jet magazines. No Jet magazines. No greasy collard greens. No greasy collard greens. Just my black ass Afro pick.
Interior Donald Goins Senior High Classroom Day. Fade up on the punkadelic blonde dreads of a black-skinned girl. Slowly pan left to right, overlap, dissolve, and pan right to left across the faces of the other students seated in the classroom. Each face a frightening caricature of the grotesque. My high school was overridden with niggas.
Not the slow-witted, slow-shuffling, eyeball-rolling, flapjack-flipping niggas in the brownstones off Central Park West. Or the upwardly mobile, paper bag colored Klingon niggas of the bushy boogaloo. But nigga niggas, the nightmarish kind. Mindless, angel dusted, darkies, slobbering insane single syllables, flicking switchblades and flashing straight razors, hip hoppity jungle bunnies in brightly colored clothes, carrying large, loud radios, we white wits called spadios, who drank bubbling purple carbonates and ate fried pork rinds and bag after bag of dehydrated potato slices caked with orange dust. Crotch clawing niggas who talked deputy dog and shot dope. Saucer lip ragoons who called me the Ozark Mountain she devil and asked to feel my lunch money. Percussive porch monkeys who fought with their face to a heavy metal bass. These were the kind of niggas my daddy warned me about. The kind of niggas my daddy said would whisk me off to the Isle of Unrestrained Negroes far, far away and turn me into a cold black pickaninny with a nappy ribbon top and white button eyes if I wasn't a good girl, and niggas, daddy said. The last section from that I'm going to read from Negrophobia. Grainy black and white World War II stock footage of a raised Eastern European city flickers on the movie screen. Plumes of smoke rise from the ruins. An undulating line scratched directly on the film, graffiti of Mickey Mouse's head bob on the remainder of the city's standing walls. Corpses blobbed on the film surface with black paint littered the landscape. Having armed and organized themselves into efficient paramilitary units in the second decade of the 21st century, the forces of white supremacy finally claimed victory in their war on the hordes of lascivious mongrels in the American homeland. After a ruthless campaign of mass terror, brown shirt brutality, and outright assassination, the white supremacist army won public sympathy to their cause by evoking the holy names of God and his only son, claiming their actions were for the overall white Christian goodness. It was in the spirit of white Christian goodness that the endless song, or final solution, was put into effect. As in the words, the old Negro spiritual, the white man finally laid his burden down. The United States Second Civil War in the 21st century had reduced the nation to a vast boneyard of ruinated cities and extirpated lives.
But far below the city's rubble was another world, a world blinded by fairy dust and cheap slag-of-hand tricks. A world populated by cantankerous ducks and talking mice. A world with holographic signs promising low, low prices and bargains galore. An underworld fun world for children of all ages. A living shopping world for the whole family. A Disney world. High definition television screen and the spherical shapes of Mickey M's face. The screen crackles in a blizzard of snow, static and white noise, which recedes into a blip. The television broadcasts a picture of Sleeping Beauty Castle at night, a firework display bursting above the battlements. Doe-eyed Busty and swathed in leaves, Tinkerbell flutters on screen in a trail of pixie dust, waving her wand. The U.S. presidential seal appears in a ring of radiant concentric circles, its eagle replaced by Mickey M's face. A special announcement by the United States President for Life. Tinkerbell grasps the folds of her translucent wings, curtsies, and flies away with the grace of a hummingbird. The castle drawbridge lowers across the moat with the rasp of rusted chains. A glass coffin slides from the mouth of the castle on a bed of dry ice. This frosted lid creaks open. A man dressed in a conservative blue suit with icicles encasing his head like a ball of porcupine quills rises from the coffin. The prickled ice ball turns to slush and falls away in chunks. The man smiles and clears his throat. The man is Walt Disney.
212 years ago, a great marksman in whose symbolic shadow we stand took and pulled the trigger and shot a rabble-rousing nigger. His shot rang out as a foreboding death knell to millions of Negroes living happy as hogs on the tax dollars of hard-working Christian white folks like you and I. Uh-oh, they fought. There go the monthly welfare checks. We's going to have to go back to robbing chickens from the henhouse. But 50 years later, we rejoice in the marvelous fact that the Negro is no more. 50 years later, we no longer suffer the indignified presence of the blues and jelly pigfoot knuckles that were the Negro's life. 50 years later, we no longer hear the Negro complain he is sadly crippled by the chains of discrimination as he languishes on the urine-stenched street corners of American society, singing doo-wop and swilling from a jar of King Kong corn. 50 years later, we no longer hear the Negro whine that he is in exile in his own land as he mounts our naive and trusting daughters who offered up the golden down of their loins in an act of misguided compassion, impregnating her with his evil seed. America found tranquility by laying the Negro to rest. We stripped him of his claim to humanity. We put down his revolt, which threatened to shake the very foundation of our nation. I say to you today, my friends, through the miracle and power of imagination, I wished upon a star and made my that one day this nation would rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. Hang the nigger and burn the Jew. That one day in a wondrous shopping mall, beneath the red hills of Georgia, filled with rides and amusements for the whole family, the sons of former slave owners would dine on the sons of former slaves, secure in the knowledge their silverware was safe from theft. I wish upon a star that one day the content of this nation would be judged by its lack of characters of color. I wish upon a star and made my dream come true. That one day every coon town would burn to the ground, every gin stop and catfish row made low, the black places made white
up would be down, mice would talk, elephants would fly. The glory of Fantasyland would be revealed.
And all of Mickey's friends would see it together. When the hour of death knelled for the Negro, America became a nation of unsullied whiteness. Negroes burned on the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Negroes burned on the mighty mountains of New York. Negroes burned on the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Negroes burned on the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Negroes burned on every hill and molehill of Mississippi. On every mountainside, Negroes burned. We let Negroes burn, and the stench filled every village and every hamlet, every state and every city. But we didn't care. In our hearts, we thought, let those Negroes burn. We let Negroes burn in this. Then one day, the air cleared, and all of Mickey's friends, white men and white women, white boys and white girls, joined hands and sang, paraphrasing the words of the old darky spiritual. Gone at last, gone at last, thank God Almighty them niggas is gone at last.
I'll change up a little bit. I was asked to participate in an exhibition in the Netherlands. And I was asked to contribute a piece on Semra, probably the most important composer of the 20th century. And what I chose to contribute is what I imagine the last 8 minutes of brain activity as he lay dying, you know, what was going through his mind. It's called orchestration.
I am the calm membrane of the unstruck drum. The vaginal tuning fork's infinite hum. Omnidirectional chord of ecstasy. The Big Bang, wet, writhing, keening in a lover's ear of ecstasy. Ein Freud in Klein, Erlachtung. Electric teens churn tumult of darkened heavens, illuminating souls, black sun interior.
Strangely, I've forgotten how to breathe. Breathe in, not out.
Silver discs cruise over the magic city, invisible to all but the third eye. Armada
or airborne virus.
Afronaut invasion or contagion. Pink elephants on parade or spiked lemonade.
I don't know why, but I'm high in the sky. My oh my, kiss my ass.
Thank you.
in search of a ghost in rotted shoes, the daddy she will never find. The wounded mulatto shuffles the deck of the African trunk. In search of a ghost in rotted shoes, the daddy she will never find. The wounded mulatto shuffles the deck of the African tarot and draws the amniotic night mother of many limbs and cries her Zulu in her puddle of charge of fluids. She lunged in a fury of arms, hands, hair, sigh. She lunged in torrential rage. Her fist shatters breastplate, cracking bone, plunging through chest, blood in a froth of bubbles and splintered shards, unmooring my heart, a muscle, organ meat, in the gutters with ganglia. My chest a cavity, an empty chamber, haunted by ghosts spinning in centrifugal void. She draws this muscle, this organ, this heart to her mouth, biting its flesh with bleached incisor. It bursts bitter juice like rotted fruit. Rivulets spill in red plasma over her lips. Plasma over the incline of her lower flue. She howls in lunar silhouette, crouched on hind legs, matted with clots of pungent shag. In the mirror of sleep, her gaze returned, a carousel blurred in the centrifugal void. The wolf clown collaged in the refracted planes, rides up and down. Around and around, a horse crafted in wood, carved by hand. Its whittled nostrils flare, snorting confetti. Its eyes, lifeless daubs of white enamel. I stare at the center of my eyes' reflection. In my silence, I am armored. An energetic shield replicates the black mother. She dangles your severed head. She is Kali. In my silence, I am invisible. I am earth. I am sky. I am light. I am darkness. I am Gede. This is my grave. Luminous hieroglyphs unscroll on invisible parchment.
Luminous hieroglyphs,
backlit by a shell of chromatic radiance. Splayed pinpoints of lights, clusters of stars, asteroids, comets. My skull's inner chamber roils with smoldering embers of mugwort, frankincense, and myrrh. The pungent fingers of ghosts. Elongated swerves of tar black, and incandescent vertebrae, undulating black nippled nakedness with copper blocks writhing in serpentine flame.
Hieroglyphs.
Crackles of splintered lights glimmer on cushioned lips, eyes, refracted prisms, pupils, in two-car collision.
Hieroglyphs.
Budded vaginal folds, swollen with blood, billow and spill, night's amniotic waters, dissolving bitter crystals on my tongue. Splintered shards of silver light, whirlwittishin in concentric vacuum, rivulets, rife in rounded contours.
Hieroglyphs.
Gossamer fibers woven into the delicate architecture of my psyche. Outside my capsule of flesh, I watch through the scrim of undulating fire. I expand
beyond my membrane of cellophane skin. Luminous hieroglyphs scroll on invisible parchment, embossed in golden, gilded reflections, refractions. Bubbly red, sparkling greens, fuzzy yellows. I am an alien alphabet foaming in effervescence, swirling in a vortex of carbonated colors. I am an obscure tongue of the star system Sirius, speaking in the astral pictographs of the dog-headed Dogon. I am a syncopated melody, carved on the ancient walls of Temple Anubis.
Luminous.
I am vivified breath, exhaling variegated light. I am a penal eye revolving in the bush of ghosts.
Luminous.
On
invisible parchment, backlit by a shell of chromatic, radiance, splayed, pinpoints of light, clusters of stars, asteroids, comets, my skull, inner chamber, royal, with smoldering embers of mugwort, frankincense, myrrh.